Now I'm sorted. Yeah, I was thinking about life a bit, really, and I don't know about you, but sometimes I find life seems a bit like a giant game of snakes and ladders with all the ups and downs that you encounter. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, we've got communion. Where's that thought going, really? And it took me to the road to Emmaus, and I was thinking, what a load of ups and downs and snakes and ladders the couple on the road to Emmaus had. So I'm going to read to you the account, and then just take it a few words at a time and just think it through and hopefully help us to think for us when those snakes and ladders come, where's Jesus in it? Where was Jesus for this couple on the road to Emmaus? And as you know the story, they met him in the breaking of the bread. And tonight, I pray that we also will meet Jesus in the breaking of the bread. So if you've got your Bibles, it's Luke chapter 24, starting at verse 13. And I think Stan's going to put it on the screen as well. Now that same day, two of them were going to the village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem? Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened here in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." So it starts off by saying that same day. So we're here on the resurrection day, the day when the women had gone to the tomb, when the disciples had also gone to the tomb, and there was these rumors now that Jesus had risen. So two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. Now later in the passage it says that it's getting towards evening when they neared Emmaus, and so I'm guessing they must have left Jerusalem in the early afternoon, because unless it's me walking, it probably takes 2 to 2.5 hours to walk 7 miles. If it's me, it takes an awful lot longer. They were talking, they were chatting. So perhaps they were just coming back from the Passover. Remember, it had been the Passover feast. They had perhaps hung around after the Passover, particularly with all the events of Jesus having died, and that probably they needed each other to encourage each other. And as they walked, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. That must have been a very gloomy walk at that point. They seemed to have very little hope. And as they walked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. I guess we all know those times where we desperately want to see Jesus, we desperately want to know Jesus, but we don't seem to be able to see him. They too experienced that. So he asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" Now, I hadn't thought of this before, but reading a commentary on this, the commentator said that actually it was very brave of them to tell this stranger what they were discussing, because Jesus had just been crucified and he was public enemy number one. And if they were going to say actually they were part of his crowd, then they were actually putting themselves in some sort of danger. But there must have been something about this stranger that they met along the road that convinced them that he was trustworthy, that they could open their hearts to him. So they stood still, their faces downcast, and one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem, and you do not know the things that have happened here in these days?" They just couldn't believe that there was anybody who didn't know that Jesus had been crucified. A bit like, I guess, if you think back to that day in August 1997 when Princess Diana had that car crash and was killed, everybody in Britain knew that that had happened. It was just astonishing to them that this stranger didn't know. So he asked what things it was. And I think on this point, you can really see the snakes and ladders going on. So they start off with what I think is probably a ladder for them. They said about Jesus of Nazareth, "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people." That was something that was encouraging to them. There was hope. But immediately the snakes start appearing. "We had hoped he was the one who was going to redeem Israel." We had hoped. That hope seemed to have evaporated from them. And then they record that it's the third day since it all took place, and some of the women have amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. That should have been a massive ladder, but I think there's, in their words, there's still that, "We're not sure. We're not sure whether we can believe this report." After all, it was only women who were saying this, because some of the companions went and they found it just as the women had said, but no sign of Jesus. Can we trust this news? Is this hope? Is this just something that's going to dash our hopes again? And this stranger then replies to them, "How foolish you are and slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" You see a sort of light bulb moment beginning to occur. They're beginning to think, well, perhaps. So he starts with Moses, by which probably is meant the first five books of the Bible rather than just the person of Moses. So he starts with Moses and all the prophets, and he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Quite often we think of that as a sort of series of, oh, I wonder what passages he actually used. But it's generally thought that what he was doing was tracing the history, God's history of salvation, which he started right back from the moment that Adam and Eve fell in the Garden of Gethsemane, that's the other one, isn't it? The Garden of Eden. And right through from Abraham and all of the patriarchs, Moses, David and the kings, all the prophets. God was setting out how he was going to save not just Israel, but the whole world. God was going to undo the curse that had been put in place when Adam and Eve decided to disobey God. And that Jesus really was that Messiah that they had hoped for. It said right at the beginning, he was a prophet powerful in word and deed. We'd hoped that he was going to redeem Israel. Jesus is here pointing out to them, yes, he is. He is the apex. He is the climax of all of that Old Testament salvation which Israel enjoyed. And he was coming to save the world. The plan had been set in place generations before. God knew what he was doing. And yes, Jesus might have been crucified, but he was still the one to save the world, to save them. So they then get near to Emmaus, and Jesus continues as if going further on, but they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it's nearly evening, the day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. They obviously, by now, had realized there was something special about this stranger. They still don't realize it's Jesus, and I think they wanted more. It wasn't just their normal Eastern hospitality that was encouraging him to stay. It was something more. So what I want us to do just for a moment is to pause and for us each to think a bit about our life at the moment. Think about whether there are any areas where you feel disappointed with God, where perhaps you feel that God has given you words and promises at some point in the past which have come to nothing, just like these people were hoping that Jesus was to be the one. Are there prayers that just don't seem to have been answered? People you have longed to see healed, not healed. Broken relationships not mended. Family and friends who have walked away from Jesus or never been interested in getting to know him. Just pause for a moment and think about any of those. And if Jesus were to appear and walk alongside you in those situations, what would you like to say to him about those things? And in the silence, listen to any answers that he seems to be giving to you. I find that often I know intellectually the answers that God may be giving me.
And often I'm able to give comfort and advice to other people with the words that I know full well I need to hear and to heed for myself. The intellectual knowledge doesn't change us. And these disciples must have listened to Jesus' words, and they must have been very impressed and perhaps even convinced by them, but they still hadn't recognized Jesus until, when he was at table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. I don't know what it was. Lots of people have got lots of theories about what it was that made them suddenly realize that was Jesus as he broke the bread. Something made them recognize him. And tonight, as we break bread and as we share wine, we also need to recognize Jesus. We need to be reminded again of his great love and his acceptance of us, his forgiveness of us, his sacrifice for us, which enables us to enjoy a relationship with God, who is our creator and sustainer. We've sung about those things, but this recognition needs to go far deeper than just our heads. We really need to take that on board, and as we share the elements of communion, we need to really recognize Jesus in that. We need to recognize Jesus here. We sung standing here in the midst of us. That always gives me tingles, that song, the idea that Jesus is really here standing with us. I think that's just such an amazing thought. And they also had that. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? That moment of really experiencing God. And I just want us to again have a couple of minutes of silence to reach out to God and to hopefully experience something again of God standing here in the midst of us, of burning within us as they experienced it, accepting the healing he's got to offer us, the saving, the restoration, the acceptance, whatever it is we need from God tonight. Let's reach out and really experience God's offer of that to us tonight. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It's true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Meeting with Jesus resulted in action. They were changed and they had to share the good news with their friends. And I find that a challenge. How does our meeting with Jesus change us? And how are we willing, and where are we willing, and when are we willing to share that with our friends? Or do we choose to keep it to ourselves? Would we run 7 miles to tell somebody? While they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." And I think each of us needs to hear Jesus say that to us. Peace be with you. Say that in your head and add your name to it. The account goes on to say they were still afraid. And in my experience of being a Christian doesn't make everything better. But encountering with Jesus and knowing his words of peace make life possible, whether the snakes or the ladders seem to be winning. So I pray as we receive communion, we will really see Jesus afresh in the breaking of the bread. We will really understand in our hearts that he is here with us, that he is changing us, and that we will want to go out and share that with those we meet.